Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
If it's either, you know, knocking doors, making phone calls, chasing ballots, or having a party, the right thing to do is to choose knocking doors, making phone calls, and chasing ballots.
I have video evidence to show you of at least one instance where people show up at these folks' doors pretending to be from my client's office or similar government agencies saying, you need to prove to us you can vote. I mean, that in and of itself is a problem here.
Our client does voter outreach all the time. They've reached a million voters this year, never been a single complaint. Our client and none of our client's volunteers have ever done the kinds of things that he's talking as far as we're aware.
Our goal is obviously always transparency. So it's pulling the curtain back behind that process and showing how it all works. And again, reminding people that there are ways to follow that process as it goes.
And joining me to talk about the state GOP skipping an election night party this year, the fight over whether or not to release the names of voters affected by the MVD glitch and more are Doug Cole of High Ground. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mark.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good to have you guys both here. So, Doug, you're going to have to find other plans for election night this year, huh?
Yeah, I was really looking forward to the balloon drop and all the celebration. You know, these parties have been part of the Arizona Republican Party history since I've been involved in politics in the 80s. But I got to tell you, as late, there hasn't been much to celebrate. So I can understand why they pulled the plug on the celebrations this year. In the last cycle, our former party chair, Kelly Ward, spent extravagantly on that party and was widely criticized. And to be honest with you, the party doesn't have any money. So I think it really was the logical choice, and that money should be going into races.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because that's the rationale that the new chair, Gina Swoboda, made, which is that we're going to put the money into the campaign so we actually have things to celebrate. Sounds like you don't think that's necessarily the wrong choice here.
No, it's the proper choice, especially after what happened under Kelly Ward's leadership of the party. I think it's good for them to take a break and use the little resources that they do have to try to turn some of these really tight legislative races in some of these county races that are pretty tight.
Well, so Sam, the Democrats are going to have a party on election night. I'm curious if you think, like, should the Democrats be putting more of their money into the actual races so they have maybe more to celebrate on election night?
Yeah, I think that as you can see, if you have a television anywhere within a, 50-mile radius of your eyeballs, there hasn't been that much of a difficulty raising money for the party that is well organized and well prepared for the fight that was ahead of them. And you're seeing that happen and really express itself. So I think that the Republican Party is seeing that there might not be as much to celebrate come November 5th, and there's going to be less of a reason to have that party. And all systems go on the Democratic side. And what I'm saying in terms of the heavy fundraising is that you can do both, right? We are doing the equivalent of walking and chewing gum at the same time. We're going to be able to celebrate on the evening of November 5th while knocking well over, millions of doors and making phone calls and sending text messages and making sure that we're chasing those ballots appropriately.
Do you get input on the menu at the Democrats' election night party?
No, I'm just enjoying the food and the beverage.
Okay. All right. So
the watered-down drinks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, the open bar or the cash bar is always the big question,
there you go,
right?
Yeah.
So, Doug, let me ask you about this fight now over whether or not the voters who are on this list, couple hundred thousand, 200-some-odd thousand voters who have been allowed to vote full ballots despite not having shown proof of citizenship, which is what state law requires, basically due to a glitch at the Motor Vehicle Division. There's a conservative-leaning group that is trying to get the names of these voters, and Secretary of State Adrian Fontes is like, sure, you can have them, just not before the election. There's going to be a hearing coming up pretty soon where a judge is essentially saying to Fontes, prove to me why you shouldn't release them now. Do you he is concerned that there's going to be voter intimidation, that this group is going to use this list to go after, maybe harass these voters, and make them prove maybe that they are allowed to vote. Do you buy his argument?
Well, first of all, let's back up. This isn't something that just happened in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
These voters, this has been going on as far as I can tell since the 90s.
when the motor voter laws came into effect. And so this is not a new situation. What's new is it's come to light because somebody noticed a coding error in the database. There are, you know, usually what happens in these type of cases, no major changes are made to voting procedures and anything to do with the votes. It's the cool off period because you don't want this type of thing to be weaponized.
Especially as you get closer to the election.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, there's a case going on right now in Virginia with Governor Youngkin that has some similar points that's going on in here in Arizona, just not as big as a number. And so there really should be this pause around an election so it cannot be weaponized. And I think that's what the Secretary of State is trying to accomplish here because – it's going to be weaponized afterwards once it's released anyway. But at least we should try to get through the election without that controversy hanging over everybody's head.
Sam, yeah. What do you think? I mean, do you think this group? I mean, these are in theory at least public records. I mean, should the group not have access to them?
I think that this group and others that are allied to it have shown a propensity to weaponize that information. To Doug's point, and I think that Secretary Fontes will have a very successful effort in defending the decision to not make that public until post-election.
Do either of you see this potentially – I mean, do you think that this could be weaponized in a sense, Doug? Like, do you think that, you know, there's a danger that these voters could face some kind of harassment or some kind of issue that they otherwise wouldn't, especially because this is not something that they did. This is something that has nothing to do with the people involved. They did what they were supposed to be doing, and it was a glitch somewhere else that caused this issue.
Well, I can see, you know, I agree with Sam that eventually this information is a public record as the public registration rules are, will be released. And I think what's going to happen afterwards is because the elections are going to be close, and especially if the presidential race is really close, like it was last time, 10,000 and some change votes, I think there'll probably be some door knocking going on, going after these people in a very long legal drawn out battle that will last into the next presidential race.
Yeah,
correct. So this is a lose lose all the way around. It's an unfortunate situation. It's been going on for years, and we'll just have to play through it. But I think the right thing right now is to take a pause, let the election happen. And then go from there.
One of the things that's particularly interesting about this, Sam, is that even as the state Republican Party has acknowledged, a good number of these voters are registered Republicans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the piece here that really, if this becomes public record, there's really no guarantee that the only folks that this group that was pushing this narrative is going to go after are all of those voters. So you can specifically target that. So I think that's where the likelihood of that weaponization and harassment even goes higher. That who are they going to knock on the doors of? Everyone on that list or a particular subset of that list?
And that's why the Republicans initially, when the number was smaller, joined in with the Secretary of State, where they were on the same side for once. but historically, it's got to be more Republican because Republicans have had a huge majority, not so much now. This started back in the 90s. So historically, it has to be more Republican on that list.
Yeah, I mean, just by math.
Right. So guys, we saw this week, and my colleague Wayne Shutsky was reporting this earlier this week about the fundraising records broken in the Maricopa County Recorder race. The Democrat Tim Stringham has raised about $612,000. The Republican nominee Justin Heap has about $353,000. This used to be a race that like nobody cared about at all, and now it's raising close to $1 million.
Yeah, well, I mean, Recorder Purcell had the office for quite
life.
A long time, right?
Yeah, so yeah,
there wasn't really any attention on the office, and once there was attention, I think you're really seeing that. And Arizona just generally has matured as a politically astute place. So I think that you're seeing something like numbers across all races are much higher than they ever have been. But I think that this is an outsized increase. And I think it's because of how important this position is, especially with the balance of the board in question as well.
That's right. And to Sam's point, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors for decades has been 4-1 Republican. And it could be 3-2 Republican or 3-2 Democrat, depending upon how districts 1 and 3 go in that race, because they're open seats. So Yeah, a lot of attention because, you know, the board shares election responsibilities with the recorder. And the board counts all the ballots and does election day work, and the recorder typically does early balloting, voter registration duties as part of the election process. So I'm not surprised. Stringham's out there working really hard. He's new to the scene. He's a Navy vet. Justin Heaps currently in the legislature, part of the Freedom Caucus group. So you have a real ideological difference between those two, and those are big fundraising numbers. You would never see that in the Helen Purcell days.
Right. No, not at all. Well, is it surprising, especially for someone like Stringham, who, Doug, as you say, is brand new to politics, that he's raised $600,000, twice what a sitting lawmaker has raised?
Right, because there's a national focus on Maricopa County, as there will continue to be as we continue to be a swing state. And yeah, there's national attention on this race.
I'm curious, real quick before we go to break, how do you both see this race shaping up? Sam, what do you think?
I think that because of the attitude and the direction globally right now, I think that every Democrat up and down the county ballot has the edge.
Sam, Doug,
what do you think? I think that I agree with Sam. I don't think every Democrat has the edge, but I think that this is probably on the county race is probably the best Democrat looking year that they have had since the 70s, the 60s and the 70s. I don't think it'll be a clean sweep, but I think there's going to be some surprises.
Interesting.
In county land.
Guys, let's talk about some records that were unsealed this week. This was a big legal fight between Ruben Gallego and his ex-wife, Kate Gallego, and a conservative-leaning newspaper based out of Washington, D.C. Sam, this group had wanted the Gallegos' divorce records for some time. The Gallegos appealed to the state Supreme Court, who said they had to be unsealed. They were, and?
Nothing. It's a garden variety, to quote the judge
that was presiding
over that, right? And I think that it just truly proves that this was really a last gasp of relevancy from, you know, Lake and her allies. And it's really clear to me anyway, because I would much rather, as an ASU Sun Devil fan, much rather talk about the positives of U of A football than this particular piece of news from this week. But
wow,
it just really cements in my mind that Carrie Lake is just a piece of rotting fruit in that basket of deplorables.
Well, it brought to mind of Geraldo Rivera standing in the basement of the Lexington Hotel in the mid-80s looking for Al Capone's vault, and then there was nothing there.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So I think, you know, she was hoping for an October surprise, and it's been the October non-surprise.
That's right.
It was a complete nothing burger, and for her and her surrogates to put so much behind this. Even she was on another radio station here in the Valley the day before this thing was unsealed, but she had nothing to do with it, but she kept referring to it. So you know, I'm glad this is behind us. I'm sorry that Mayor Gallego and Ruben Gallego. A lot of people forget the mayor is also on the ballot, okay? Everyone talks, about Ruben Gallegos, but she also has a race going on.
Which is interesting, right? The fifth biggest city in the country,
exactly.
Mayoral race, and almost nobody
talking
knows about it. Yeah.
And she has an opponent who's campaigning against her. Yeah. So we all focus on Ruben, but she also has a race going on the November ballot.
Absolutely.
Do you get the sense, Doug, the Lake campaign has said that they had nothing to do with it. They sent out a statement calling this, you know, all sorts of words yesterday about how terrible this is for the Gallegos and how shameful it all is. Do you think that they were just hoping that there might be something in there? Like, I would imagine that they didn't know that this was, as Sam quoted the judge, a garden variety divorce case.
Well, I think that, you know, everybody wants to protect their kids. And, you know, they co-parent their kid. And I've seen them both with their child and them together. And I think, you know, that should be every parent's number one concern. And Carrie Lake's been going around calling herself Mama Bear. Well, I don't think a Mama Bear would behave the way she has in this instance. So I'm glad it's out there. I'm sorry it came to what it had to go through all these processes. But no, I think she was really looking for something because, you know, a new CBS poll just came out about an hour ago that shows her down still around 8 to 9 points. So she, you know, she is she is in the final stage of a faltering campaign.
Yeah, and this has nothing to do with hiding from public scrutiny. Mayor Gallego has been mayor. She was on council previous to that. Congressman Gallego has taken hundreds of votes in Congress, hundreds of votes previous to that when he was in the state legislature. I think voters in both races, the city of Phoenix mayoral race and the U.S. Senate race, are very clear about the public records of both of those particular candidates. This added no material information to voters' decisions.
Do you think that the unsealing of these records and what they ultimately show, does this affect the race in any way for either candidate?
Not in the slightest bit.
No, I totally agree. Not in the slightest bit. It's a big October nothing burger.
All right. So we've quoted a judge and John Boehner in the same segment.
Yes, we have.
Like that. Yeah. All right. So there, speaking of polls, Doug, you referenced the CBS poll. There was a Noble Predictive Insights poll this week that I think caught some people off guard that showed that Congressman Eli Crane and his Democratic challenger, Jonathan Nez, former Navajo Nation president, are tied in Congressional District 2 up in northern Arizona. Am I wrong to say that this caught people by surprise?
I don't think you're wrong to catch that it caught people by surprise. I think that one of the things that Mike and the team at Noble Insights have done is really kind of established themselves as a pollster of record in Arizona and a lot of other Southwest markets. So I think that even added to kind of the oomph of this kind of result. I think that it wasn't a race that a lot of people have been paying attention to because we have Congressional District 1 and we have Congressional District 6 with Juan Ciscomani and Kirsten Engel in southern Arizona. So no one really kind of had this on their radar. Mm-hmm. But this has an opportunity, frankly, to have one of the first, if not the only, Doug will have to check my history here, but this could be the first Navajo Nation member in Congress, and that is historic, and I think there's a lot of energy in that district, and President Nez is a fantastic candidate, and I think that he's taking the Crane campaign by surprise.
Yeah, it would be the first Native American in Congress representing Arizona. You know, John, the Navajo Nation is huge. We have 22 nations in Arizona. And I think that district has probably half of them touch that district. You have the Navajos, the Hopis, all the Apache tribes are in that district, and the Zunis. And it's just amazing to see that this is even close in this district. Remember, Congressman Crane was one of the few handful of members that helped oust Kevin McCarthy. He's very, very closely aligned with the Freedom Caucus, the far right caucus in Congress. And I got to tell you, I get a text from Jonathan Nez's campaign almost every day, if not twice a day. Hmm. I mean, they're organized. They're raising money. He was a well-respected president of the nation. He didn't have much controversy. I know we're going through a lot of controversy right now in the nation between the president and the vice president. But he was a pretty stable leader and was well-respected.
Mm-hmm. And he will be well-respected in Congress as well.
I mean, so, Doug, do you think that he actually could pull this off, especially because this was not a race that was on a lot of national radars? It doesn't seem like there's been a lot of, for example, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee hasn't really spent, I don't think, any money in there. And if they have, it's not a lot.
Well, the other thing that's interesting, Mark, is he's in the last reporting period, former President Nez outraised Eli Crane by $1 million.
Huh.
And that's a lot in that race. Now, it's all about turnout, okay? It's all about turnout. Turning out on tribal land and Native American lands is a whole different game. But with a good ground game, it can happen, and it could make a difference. Because remember, you also have a pretty good Trump support base up on the rim there. I mean, the Trump stores in Shiloh, this is that district, okay? So you do have a very, very, very MAGA-oriented voting base up there also. So it's all going to be about turnout.
Well, so, and Sam, and to Doug's point, turning out, you know, we've seen, for example, there's a story about, you know, trying to take voters on, I think, on the Navajo Nation by horseback to the mm-hmm. polls. And it's a very different kind of situation than, you know, just getting in a car and driving to a polling place like you would here in the Valley. How does this give his campaign a boost, Nez's campaign, to have a poll come out like this that shows him tied in a race that really hasn't been on a lot of people's radars?
I think without question. I mean, I think when you have someone with a lived experience that matches those that you're asking for support at the ballot box, I think that really helps folks get up on that horse and make it to the ballot box in that way. And I think perhaps to go back to one of the first stories that we were talking about, this may be another data point of why the Republican Party isn't very interested in having a party on November 5th, because for the first time in a very, very long time, our federal delegation has a chance to be a supermajority for the Democratic Party.
Hmm. All right, so guys, just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you both really quickly about this. Normally, we wouldn't be talking about orders from the state Supreme Court that don't revolve around cases, but they're trying to prioritize election-related cases this year because, obviously, there are deadlines that that have to be met for this. So the question I want to ask each of you is, how many cases, like, are we going to see as many election-related cases this after this election as we have in the past? Sam, what do you think?
I think the easy answer is yes. A lot of that heavy fundraising that we were talking about going to is going straight to law firms that are preparing for all of these things. I think another reason why that order came out before I throw it to Doug here is that, you know, we have a vacancy that's coming up, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's going to be on the court. So you have someone that's going to have to be pulled up from the Court of Appeals for each of these things. So to be able to kind of prioritize that gets the whole kind of infrastructure of the judicial system ready for what's about to happen.
Well, my hat's off to Chief Justice Timmer for taking this proactive move to foreshadow what is going to happen. And to answer your question, I think it's going to be more because of the aforementioned MVD situation we talked about earlier in the show. You're going to have, I think, a lot more races that are close, all across, you know, from local elections all the way up to U.S. Senate and the presidential race. So I think everything's going to be litigated. I also think the Trump campaign and the RNC has already removed their longtime lawyer here and has flown somebody in from out of state to take over the legal team here in Arizona. And I know the Democratic Party is also getting the best lawyers, and they have a lot of good election lawyers, just like the Republicans have a lot of good election lawyers. So, you know, it's going to be buckle up, and it's just not going to be in the Maricopa County Superior Court. It's going to be in a lot of these other rural courts, like we saw in Cochise County, with all the controversy down there with the supervisors.
Interesting, Mario. We'll have to leave it there. Doug Cole, Sam Richard, thanks both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.